We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning, Diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Happy preseason week one.
Woohoo! Good times.
Had the first set of games yesterday, which was great. Just seeing football again, although... Really, if you're just a really an incredibly big football fan and you're just there to watch the second half, it's really only the first quarter or first drive you need to watch, because there were certain guys out there. There was Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, who came in after Case Keenum.
Yeah, Eli's done. I mean, Daniel Jones goes perfect. He's done. I mean, how long have we been saying Eli's done?
Hey, I mean... Daniel Jones at least is giving it consideration right now, because if I had to put one preseason week, one of the more memorable ones for me was just when Matt Schaub came in as the starter for the Raiders in 2014 when Derek Carr was the second round pick. And in the first few games, Derek Carr hadn't showed much that to the point where they were going to make him the starter. It was still Matt Schaub. It was going to be Matt Schaub. And then in preseason week four, he came in and threw three touchdowns just like that against the Seahawks, because they always play the Seahawks in week four. And then he got the starting job off of that. You heard the story on Hard Knocks. That's why I like James Jones and AB, when they were talking about that. So Daniel Jones already making a name for himself. I mean, no, he's definitely not going to be the starter right away. But, hey, the guy's at least... playing well, so
could be sooner rather than later.
Maybe.
We could be seeing Eli, you know, maybe going off into the sunset this year.
Felt bad for Eli.
I know.
But
I mean, the guy is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, for goodness sake, 1-2. So,
and Kyler Murray, he didn't even get a touchdown on the scoring drive because there were a couple of flags, but as far as I see, he had a clean pocket for the most part. He had to use, I think, like maybe one or two plays where he actually had to use his legs, but that guy could throw.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just watching him with a clean pocket, right? He had an open wide receiver, and it reminded me, I'm not saying he's going to be this guy, so when I make this comparison, don't go nuts. I'm not saying he's going to be the MVP this year, because he's probably not. But when I watch Kyler Murray throw the football, seeing the way he threw it, the style, I'm like, yeah, he's for sure a baseball player, because Patrick Mahomes and him kind of look the same when they throw the bait. Because Patrick Mahomes was a baseball player, too, and
right,
the guy could throw in the high 90s when he was a pitcher. So I saw a little similarities in the way they threw the ball. Now, I'm not saying he will be Patrick Mahomes.
I mean,
that's
a high level,
yes,
right there.
Not saying he's going to be that, but when I watched him throw the ball, I was like, okay, I see a little similarities to Patrick Mahomes there when he threw it. But that
NFL
guy,
fans ain't hoping for that to be the case this year.
Right. But, Patrick Mahomes, too, is just he's a different animal altogether.
Yeah.
He just managed to get those skill position players and become the leader of them in his second season. But at the same time, though, when I'm watching Kyler Murray, the least thing he's got is at least he's an athlete, for sure. So I'm excited to watch the Cardinals, believe it or not, this season when actual football
It's intriguing, around. Honestly.
It is intriguing. And we'll see if he's not going to have – he's not going to have that clean pocket every time, because he really – Cardinals. Their offensive line is part of the reason why David Johnson took such a downturn in his career when he started off so hot. So we'll see how they do. And it all depends whether he can manage the offense and what he does pre-snap and all those different things, along with Cliff Kingsbury, how they match up with the play calling. It all depends. And from the 707 on the Chilton Autobody text line, Russell Wilson also. You saw how he was so like, I never thought I'd see this, but the guy was, I thought about Russell Wilson. I'm like, somehow Russell Wilson looks bigger. Kyler Murray looks so small out there.
Well, let's see. What is it, about an inch difference?
A couple inches.
Is it
I
a
think.
Couple inches?
Yeah.
I think he was like 5'9 and 5'10, or is the Russell, what is he, 5'10 or 5'11?
Russell Wilson's just over 6 feet, I think, or just at 6 feet.
I thought he was
small. I know Kyler small. Murray's 5'10.
Yeah, 5'10, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Russell Wilson up close once because he was he went to Irvington High School over in Fremont to play a charity basketball game. Or an alumni basketball game for charity, and Russell Wilson came down to be a part of it. And the guy, he's not all that tall.
No, 5'11", I just saw.
5'11?
Yeah,
all right.
Listed as 5'11".
All right, there we go. But yeah, I just saw Kyler Murray out there. I was like, damn, that guy, he's pretty damn small, but he could sling it. He could sling the pill, as they say, Anna.
Exactly.
He could sling the pill. But last night, in the midst of all these preseason games, there was a baseball game going on, and we're not going to harp too much into it today because we do have the 49ers and the Raiders going in to Saturday. I think they're pretty key matchups to watch just because of the questions you got on both sides of the ball. But with the Giants game, it was on YouTube last night, and I found that to be pretty enjoyable. Now, it wasn't enjoyable when I'm watching Brandon Belt come in I think it was the bases loaded in the fourth. Aaron Nola did not have anything going as far as command. He was already up to 80 pitches at that point. It was either runners on second and third or the bases loaded. But Brandon Belt's out there just first pitch swinging. It was bases loaded. Brandon Belt's out there just first pitch swinging. When Aaron Nola's got nothing going on as far as command, he couldn't even take a pitch, and I'm just like, Brandon Belt, come on, man.
Just do it.
Yeah, you're trying to rehab your image here after all these trades went down, especially the one with Joe Panic. But besides that, I mean, the Giants got the win in the end, but that's just something.
They stopped the bleeding.
It got my goat.
They did. Oh, I get that. But, you know, first off, YouTube, by the way, has been making an incredible surge when it comes to, like, live television, the streams, and everything that they have going on right now. I mean, like, they have YouTube Red. You see them working with the NBA also right now. I mean, I've had a lot of friends, you know, say how they've switched to YouTube and they love it. They've been very happy with it. So I still have my Xfinity, but I love the fact that there's all these different platforms, and I know they're going through like the whole social media aspect of it. And baseball, I know it's kind of a weird thing, but from what it sounds like, it's been more successful than Facebook was.
It was. And it mainly because, well, with Facebook at the time, I don't know if it was just where I was, but as far as the quality, sometimes it would go down as far as just streaming, what do they call it, gigabytes or however they call it, whatever, whenever it's buffers. And sometimes that would happen. But with YouTube, that never happened. And there were only 2 minute commercial breaks. They didn't show any commercials. They just showed either highlights from the game, or they showed like a montage from like the 2010 series with the Phillies, which was pretty cool. Or they just showed the pitchers warming up, and they maybe had like players doing fun things. I think the game's called Face Up, where you put the phone.
Yeah, yeah,
is that what it's called? Where you put the phone on the forehead, and you have them play charades, and it's just fun little stuff like that that you'd really see on the Jumbotron, most likely. But still, it was just something that wasn't commercial, so that was enjoyable. But overall, though, I mean, I could see in the future if something like this for YouTube and Facebook, even both. Just I could see it in the future for sports viewing.
Was this the first evening baseball game for the Giants? Because the ones I've seen on Facebook before, I felt like they were mostly all during the day.
The Facebook ones were day games.
They were all day games, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, which was actually, like, that type of medium to me is actually great for, you know, people who are at work, you know, on their computer, so you have the game on in the background. You may not necessarily have a TV around you. So that's kind of a good thing to get there too. But, you know, it did help last night getting Madison Bumgarner out there, you know, right at this is first start after the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And he was spectacular.
Yeah.
Absolutely spectacular last night.
At home in the trade deadline you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. But, he was great, and he came out after the game, and I haven't really seen him express this sort of emotion, but he seemed like he was just extraordinarily happy to be here, I think, quote-unquote, is what he said. So seeing Madison Bumgarner say that kind of makes you realize, oh, maybe he did like it more in San Francisco than I thought. Because when the trade deadline was coming up, he struck me as that kind of guy who really, since he's not from here or born here, he's won championships here, but he also struck me as the kind of guy who really wouldn't be looking back on San Francisco and thinking, like, if he were to get traded, like, oh, man, I'm gonna miss that place so much. I don't even want to try with this next team. Like, I wouldn't want to play anywhere else. I thought he'd be kind of like that sort of dude, that the guy that really wouldn't say all that stuff. But it turns out that he is. And after the game, when he spoke, I was kind of surprised by that. And he had a great outing. And the Phillies really did not look all that great. What happened to Aaron Nola?
I don't know, because he's just been the consistent ace, and it just seems like kind of faltered a bit.
Yeah, it's like the same thing that happened with Jake Arrieta from the Cubs going to the Phillies. They just dropped off all of a sudden. It's kind of unexplainable, or inexplicable is the word to really use there. But Aaron Nola, he still has the stuff. Like, he's still got his curveball. He's still got that fastball that'll go 94, 96 miles an hour, but overall, though, he seemed to have lost his command, and he was getting behind in counts, and he's just giving up a solo home run to guys like Mike Yastrzemski, and he's just giving up base hits. And these young guys, they're the ones that keep on doing it. Well, the young guys, the newer guys that just keep on doing it.
And they brought up some guys over to AA. You got Joey Bart moving up.
Joey Bart moving up. Elio Ramos moving up. Mm-hmm. And they gave Joey Rickard a shot in the outfield. I thought it was going to be Chris Shaw, but Joey Rickard is playing just as well. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's only a matter of time before we see the new prospect, Jalen Daniels, come up, or Jalen Davis, rather. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go for the outfield. But as of right now, though, the Giants, I think we can all agree that, you know, they're probably not going to make the wild card this year. But I think that as far as it goes, I mean, if they're, I don't know, 3-4 games back of the wild card compared to where they thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season, I guess the Giants front office, they could consider that a win. I mean, I think wild card was, I don't even think playoffs were even in the thought right now this season.
Do you still think they'll get to a Bochy's 2000?
Yeah. 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 I think Bochy's 2000 is easily coming up. I think they only got between 15 to 17 games to get to that. I think they can get 17 wins.
I mean, just put Madison Bumgarner out there, let him do it for Bochy.
Yeah.
Have him play at home, basically. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So coming up, though, that was the baseball talk for the day, because we do have some football yesterday.
Dun, 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 dun.
We had some comments from Kyle Shanahan talking about the preseason. He also detailed Nick Bosa's injury and also why you should not call him injury prone and put that label on him, because I feel like even more than like a, I mean, just, I mean, from the 707, is Nick Bosa going to be a bust? He can't stay healthy. I think even more than, just as much as being a bust, I think having that label as injury prone, that can't feel all that good as an athlete. But Kyle Shanahan told you why you shouldn't put the injury prone label on Nick Bosa, and you definitely can't say Nick Bosa is going to be a bust just yet.
No,
so just,
that's way just too
quick,
soon for that.
That's just a quick answer to that text on the Chilled Autobody text line at 95795. And there was also another injury, and that happened in Napa with the joint practice with the Rams. We'll get into all that next. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakabak, he's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Balti's breakdowns are legendary. His knowledge is unparalleled. And today, he's live in studio for 4 hours straight. Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Brian Baldinger. Live in studio with Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. Today starting at 10 on the Bay Area's football station, 95.7. The Game. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kakadakis.
Stephen Langford, Anna Kakadakis in with you as the pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for golden mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with our product experts. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. We got football.
Woo!
I mean, it really doesn't matter because it doesn't go into your record. You're still going to go into the season after these 4 weeks undefeated. That's the way to look at it. You got to look
like
at
that.
You got to
like
look at
positivity.
It as we're undefeated right now, and then you go, you know, if you're the Raiders, you go 0-1 against the Broncos, and you're not undefeated, or you're the Niners, and you go 0-1 against the Buccaneers, and you're not undefeated, but you're undefeated before that. That's what matters.
So how much do you weigh, like, these preseason games right now into the regular season? Obviously, the win-loss record doesn't matter. You could throw that completely out the window because that doesn't matter. But how much are you going to factor into, like, you know, seeing how, you know, you have Jimmy Garoppolo out there connecting with certain wide receivers, or if you're going to see how the offensive line's doing on either team? How much do you factor into these games?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, I think, every season, because you'll see guys that seem like MVPs in the preseason, and then they'll just come out in the regular season, and they'll be a dud, and they'll have your hopes up, but then you really won't get anything out of them in the regular season. I really don't think, in the end, though, I don't think we should put all that much stock into it. I think it's kind of different with, for instance, with basketball, when the Warriors were first on that way up in 2014-2015, Ethan Strauss, he predicted that the Warriors would win the championship that year. And then he was asked why. And he said, well, simply because of the preseason, because of the way they were just dominating every other team. So that's a little different.
Huh. But this, I didn't remember that.
But this year, especially now, the way the NFL's been trending as far as preseason goes, you want to avoid injury. And from the 912, I'm going to get to your text in a second here. But as far as just preseason, it seems like they're only playing to avoid injury now. They're not playing to win. Unless, of course, you look at the Patriots and they ended up beating the Lions like 31-3 or something like that yesterday. So,
discrepancy right there is completely different. I mean, look, you're going to have a lot of vanilla offenses that are going to be going out there. You're not going to be showing your best stuff. And it is more of the reps just trying to getting the body used to playing the game and playing against another team again. So that's where I think a lot of it comes in. And that's where the worry comes from with Nick Bosa not playing in the preseason at all, because him being out right now with the ankle sprain, whether it's, you know, high ankle, it's not apparently. Coach Shanahan said it has the components of an ankle sprain, but it's not an actual high ankle sprain.
Right. It's a severe ankle sprain is what they said. Severe is a little too much to use, I guess, but they said it wasn't a high ankle sprain, though. He needs all three components in order for it to be a high ankle sprain. Mm-hmm. And it's not. But it feels like right now the preseason, and I wish, and I don't have these comments right on me right now, but Kyle Shanahan did say that joint practices, the one that they're going to have against the Broncos this upcoming week, I mean, that's just as helpful for the season as far as the preseason goes. He said that they don't need 4 weeks of a preseason. They just need two. And that's why I was kind of saying, if you're going to make 18 game, if you're going to make the regular season 18 games, why not just knock off 2 weeks of the regular season? Don't even put that rule where you have to have one player, at least obviously they'd be on a bye, but where you can only have a player limited to 16 games. Don't have that rule. Just have them go all 17 if you need to, including the bye there. So it's like, you know.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I was talking actually to one of the scouts the other day when I was at training camp for Joy Clark Day, and I was asking him about the idea about preseason. Should they shorten the preseason, lengthen the regular season? He said, I hate it. I hate the idea that, like, look, preseason, sure, I like it to be shorter, but if you go into having less preseason games and adding two regular games, you're going to have so many more injuries. Mm-hmm. You're going to have way more injuries, and it's not going to be good for the game. It's going to have the product is going to diminish a bit, so as much as, yes, we love more football, we want to see that out there, maybe do less preseason games. I think overall it's going to be the worst decision the NFL would make.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking, like, when it comes to just, like, how much value I put into it, Anna, going into the regular season, I'm not looking at that as a whole for a team, but I really do, and I think this is a million-dollar question. Well, not the million-dollar question, because I just said you already asked a million-dollar question, but there was a big question going around when Nick Bosa went down, is should you even play him at all in the preseason, or do you want to play him in the preseason? Is it okay that he's not going to play in the preseason? Mm-hmm. And Chilton Autobody text line 95795, if you're a 49er fan, do you want Nick Bosa playing in the preseason, or at least I mean, think before the injury, even before the injury happened, right? Like, think you most likely wanted him to play all 4 weeks. And right now, it's looking like he's not going to do that. It looks like he'll be ready for the opener with Tampa Bay, but he's probably not going to be playing in the 4 weeks of the preseason. Does that concern you at all? Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Do you think that he's just already conditioned enough to the point where he's got the skills, he's got the hands, he's got the bend in order to be successful in the NFL, and he'll be okay come week one? Because for me, when I look at these preseason games, a couple of guys stand out to me as far as just rookies that are successful in the NFL now, mm-hmm. that were successful in their rookie season in the preseason. And those three are three running backs, and that's Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, and Leonard Fournette. Those guys all showed out in the preseason. Even if it was for just a little bit of amount of time, you could tell that they were ready for the NFL. And that's kind of why I want Nick Bosa to at least just play a drive. Just prove to me in the preseason, when these games don't matter, that, yeah, you're going to be that number two overall pick that everyone thinks you can be. You can be just as good as your brother. I mean, maybe one drive wouldn't show that, but just show me something, you know? I just need a little reassurance in the preseason for the rookies. That's my main thing.
For me, it's not that he has to prove anything. It's more I just want him to get the reps. But if the fact that he has this ankle sprain, I do not mind him waiting, obviously, till
right.
week one. Because, you know, that's as much as I'd love to see him just to see how he'd do out there. I think the idea of kind of keeping him safe so that way you have him for the actual regular season, I'm fine with that. But I am a little concerned when it comes to the fact that he hasn't played for pretty much a year. You know, it's been basically, I think it's been almost exactly a year since he went out at Ohio State. So it's a long time, and trying to adjust to a game. And like we said yesterday, going from 0 to 60, going from college to NFL without, you know, without any preseason games or anything, it's going to be a tall task.
Right. And when you're a defensive end, you can kind of get away with it, mm-hmm. I think, because in the end, you're just going one-on-one with the tackle, and it's just you and one other guy battling out there, and you're just trying to get to the quarterback. There's not a bunch of – you don't have to be like a linebacker like this guy. I'm about to play the sound from Robert Saleh. This is one of the rookies that I'm curious to watch because he's showed out in training camp supposedly. So this is something I want to see during the preseason. But as far as it goes with a defensive end, you don't have to worry about wide receiver switching. You don't got to worry about which man you're covering. You might have to worry about maybe switching with the defensive tackle and trying to ruin that defensive line a little bit. But for the most part, it's not the same as, like, say, I don't know, linebacker, where you're going to have to read these coverages and read what they're doing pre-snap. And Robert Saleh talked about the rookie, Dre Greenlaw. And this is one guy I'm looking forward to watching on Saturday.
Good learner. You know, you'll see him. He's playing Sam. He's playing Will. So he's going back and forth with regard to base and nickel. He's doing a very good job understanding what his issues are within the scheme, understanding the alignment part. That's all. That's not completely clean, but it's very close for a rookie. At this point in camp, you have your entire system. We can call anything at any time, and he's got to be on it, where in a game plan, it's much more specific, so it'll be easier for him to align and do all those things once a season starts. But for him, with what we're asking him to do, I think he's doing a really nice job from a learning aspect.
And I understand he was just a fifth-round pick, but Fred Warner was just a third-round pick as well. Like,
he was great.
He was great. But as far as it goes, though, you don't have Quan Alexander. It doesn't look like he's going to play in this preseason game. So you might have and by the way, I think Fred Warner was a fourth-round pick. But you're not going to have Quan Alexander out there. So I think this is a big one for Dre Greenlaw. It's just mainly – for me, it's just the rookies. That's pretty much the main point I'm trying to get to in this segment is I really look out for the rookies in the preseason.
Yeah, and it's a good way – it's a prove-it-yourself for a lot of the young guys who are also on the bubble right now. So they kind of show that this is what I have, this is what I can bring to this team, and see if you have those bursts and those flashes that – can maybe make them all of a sudden make a team. Because there's those little, you know, because you have your guys, you know, they're going to be on the team no matter what. You're going to put them on there, that's fine. But there are guys that really need to prove themselves, and that's what really the preseason's all about.
Right, and it's with guys like Dre Greenlaw, I understand, fifth-round pick probably doesn't matter all that much, but really they're thin at linebacker. And if Saquon Alexander goes down, it's going to be Dre Greenlaw that's going to have to step up, and he's going to be one who I'm going to be looking out for tonight. Obviously, though, Deebo Samuel and – or tonight.
Tomorrow night.
But obviously, Jalen Hurd and Deebo Samuel are two guys. Deebo Samuel being the earlier pick, but Jalen Hurd being the bigger guy who's been making way more news as far as just training camp stuff goes, as far as reporting goes. You're hearing the name Jalen Hurd, whether it's just him getting into shoving matches, him being the big talker with, you know, with Richard Sherman and whatnot. So I'm looking out for him as well, and Deebo Samuel. But I guess I'll just ask a question now. If you had to guess with between Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd on Saturday against the Cowboys, who do you think comes out with more targets? Do you think they're going to get an even amount? Who do you think comes out with more receptions, receiving yards? Who just comes out with the better overall stats in this game one?
That's going to be a good one there. I'm going to actually say Deebo. I think it's going to be Deebo Samuels. I think just because he's going to be somebody that they picked him pretty high too, and he's somebody that they're really going to push to see what they can get out of him. So I think you're going to get a lot of targets to both of them, but I think he's going to be the one that they're going to be pointing
at. You think so? Yeah.
How about you?
It depends, I think, really. I think if they get into the red zone, Jalen Hurd's a little bit of a bigger wide receiver, and I think if they get into the red zone, I think they're going to try out whatever they can with him, and it all depends on who plays more with that second and third team. It looks like Nick Mullins has been getting those second-team reps while C.J. Beathard's been getting the third-team reps, so interested to see how that's going to go. Wonder if they're going to keep Jimmy Garoppolo in there. Or no, they're not even playing Jimmy Garoppolo. But in the future, wonder if they're going to be keeping Jimmy Garoppolo in there for more than one or two drives. Because we're going to see a little battle between Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard. But Nick Mullins has been really, as far as you're reading, has been hooking up with both of them. He's been throwing touchdown passes to either one, so I think it's just going to be a toss-up. But the battle between the wide receivers there is going to be interesting, even though they're not even looking at it as a battle, probably. They're just looking at it as teammates who want to make each other better. And Fred Warner was a third-rounder. Thank you, 510. And 912, I didn't forget your text. The Niners are just bubble wrapping everyone. They've started every year with so many injuries. They just want to start healthy this year. So
I mean, let's look at those injuries.
They're going to play it safe. As far as it goes, what do we got here?
Well, Dee Ford expect to miss another week after the PRP injection. Then you also hear that Jerick McKinnon, with the flare-up in his knee, he's having a PRP injection done, so he's expected to miss a couple weeks as well.
Jerick McKinnon, Kaywan Williams, Jason Verrett, Weston Richburg, Nick Bosa, Joshua Garnett, Jeff Wilson Jr.
The list keeps going.
Eric Armstead, Ronald Blair, and Malcolm Smith, they have less severe injuries, but they may not play this weekend. Although I think if you're the Niners right now, though, it looks like DeForest Buckner has been playing defensive end in training camp since this D-line went down. And if you have Eric Armstead in there, you got to have Eric Armstead in there just so he can play some defensive end and get him some reps, because I think some people are putting that bust label already on Eric Armstead. I think some people already are, because he was a first-round pick, and he hasn't showed out. And it's going to be a big game for Solomon Thomas, too, for everybody. Oh, wow.
I mean, you talk about the depth. What happened to you right there?
I just look at the time and realize that talking about football kind of passes you by a little bit.
I know. It definitely does. But real quick, just the depth, the idea of the depth that you used to have with Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas. Like, okay, they're good. You can get them in here and there and have their big moments. But now you're losing a lot of that depth at defensive end. So you have it's so much thinner now. They're definitely going to have to prove themselves a little more.
Ronald Blair, too. He could be out. But
love that guy.
We'll see, though. It's because in the third and fourth quarter, for the most part, it's going to be a bunch of guys that you really haven't heard of all that much. Guys that are really just fighting for a roster spot at that point, hoping to be the third string whoever. It's going to be the first couple of drives or so where you might see guys who are potential starters, but really it's just going to be a lot of guys too that you really haven't heard of before. Trust me, you go out there and you look at the names on the back of the jerseys and you think, huh, I don't remember that being on the 90-man roster or whatever
again?
They win. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't remember any of that.
You get guys from Last Chance U.
Can't believe that.
Laney College apparently next year.
Really?
Yeah.
Serious?
I just heard that last night. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Laney College and Last Chance U. Oh. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's actually news to me. I'm looking forward to that one. They couldn't really do it with my alma mater, Chico State, because we don't really have a football team. But we will be moving forward here because there was another injury opposite with the Raiders. We'll talk about both. We got a full preview coming. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakak, he's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kakarakis.
Pre-game show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with our product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. Just to give you a little rundown here of what's to come up on the game today, we got Kevin Mitchell at 7 o'clock. Ooh, a little barehanded catch for that guy, which was unbelievable. Danny White at 8 o'clock. Former Cowboy. George Teague at 8:30, John Clayton at 9:05, Tim Roy at 9:30. That's all coming up on Joe Lowe and Dibs Stack lineup. And then you got Brian Baldinger, who will be in studio from 10 to 2 with Steiny, Guru, and Bonte. So 4 hours of Baldy's breakdowns. That's going to be a must listen for
That's
me.
A lot of opinions over there.
Yeah.
That's going to be some good football talking there.
Yeah. You know what? Steiny, Guru, Bonte, love you guys, but just ask questions and stay quiet. Just let Baldy talk, because if you hear that guy talk football, you're going to learn a thing or two. And I could just, I could so picture, I think, and Guru no doubt is going to come in here with his Ezekiel Elliott jersey because he is a Cowboy fan after all. And then he's going to be just sitting there, and I know the intent look that he has when he's going to be watching Baldy just talk football. The intense look, I think they'll have that on video for you for sure, because our digital team does a fantastic job of making videos.
They're wonderful.
After the shows, and you're going to see Guru's intense look on his face just learning football. You'll see it. Trust me. You'll see it. You heard it here at 538. But again, Brian Baldinger in studio from 10 to 2. So, you know what? Anna and I were just kind of talking at the break, and we were talking about this Niners Cowboys situation in preseason week 1, and we were talking about just the rivalry back in the day when it was Niners and Cowboys, and they were just the two best teams in the NFL, and they were just going head to head the entire time. And I'm wondering, like, I think if you have something like that, where it's just two of the best teams, where it's not within the division, you need a different word for it being called a rivalry, because I feel like rivalry means that it extends past just being two really good teams. I feel like it, as far as just like for example, the Raiders and the Chiefs, it goes way back in the early 70s and the 60s. But even though they both stink at the same time, it's still a rivalry when it's in the division, and because it's in the division. But with the Niners and the Cowboys, it was a rivalry for sure. But I think they need a different word for it, though.
See, I lived through it. I loved every moment of it. And to me, it was a rivalry, because when I think of a rivalry, I think of two teams that almost have a hate for each other. The fan bases have a hate for each other. When you circle your calendar when those teams face each other, that's the must-watch TV. Those are the games you cannot wait to see, because you know everybody's going to come 110%. They're going to be coming hard. They're going to put everything out there, not only just to get the win, but because they really want to stick it to that team.
Right.
So that's what I think of. And for me, when I was a kid in the 90s, and my family grew up, I grew up with a 49er fan. My parents, hardcore Niner fans, but my grandfather moved here from Greece, and he wanted to become All-American. So he changed his name from Vasily to Bill, and he loved everything America, and he decided to become a Dallas Cowboy fan, because not only are they Cowboys, but
right,
because they were America's team. So he became a hardcore Cowboys fan, and to the point that my dad and my grandfather could not be in the same room together when the games were on, because it would just get too heated. And my grandfather, when the Cowboys would win, he'd call my dad and say, "Did you watch that game? What'd you think of the game?"
Yeah.
My dad wouldn't call. He'd be out of respect for his father-in-law. He wouldn't call, but he would just,
right,
he'd be all proud. But there was a legitimate rivalry there. And I know a lot of people don't always think of it as a rivalry, especially when you come from the East Coast. Like we talked to Joe about it, he's like, I don't see that as a rivalry, because, obviously he comes from the Cowboys and the Eagles rivalry. He sees that one.
Right.
Because that's a division rivalry. But for us here, that was a huge rivalry. And I always remember those games, and I remember how big they were here. I mean, just the NFC conference games, going back and forth between them, the star power that you had there, you couldn't beat it.
And you also get a guy like Charles Haley who went back and forth between each team. You do have that kind of interpersonal thing. It wasn't also just, I guess, two teams that were just really good who happened to meet each other in the playoffs as well as a Super Bowl. Like, it was more just a situation, too, where you had players switching over from side to side. But Chilton Autobody text line 95795, do you still feel like that is a rivalry? Is that still one, if you're a Niner fan, that you circle every time? Because growing up a Raider fan for me, it's just automatic when it comes to the Chargers or the Chiefs. You saw what the Broncos too, but it's a little, for some reason, it just feels different with the Broncos. I can't really tell you why. I've been to games with every single one, and it's just with the Chiefs and Chargers, the yelling, the popcorn throwing, the sometimes beer tossing would get a little more intense. and for some reason it was always just with the Chargers or the Chiefs, not so much the Broncos for sure, but with the Chargers and Chiefs it was a little more elevated. But
I feel like the Broncos actually have more of a rivalry towards the Raiders though, rather than the Raiders to the Broncos. Does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah.
You know, like, I just feel like the Bronco fans tend to be like, oh, I hate the Raiders,
right,
and all this stuff, but you hear it from the Raiders, but not as much. I feel like when it comes to rivalries, you don't get your best out of your fans. You almost get the worst out of your fans sometimes.
Oh, you do. You do. It shows the ugly side of
exactly.
you. I mean, one time when I was in the bathroom at a Raider game, and in front of me was a Charger fan who was wearing a powder blue jersey.
What'd you do?
At this time, I didn't do anything. At this time, I think I was like 14 years old at the time, and I was just standing in line for the bathroom. And this Charger fan was sitting in a powder blue jersey, and a guy comes up to him out of nowhere, random Raider fan, tugs on his jersey, and then says, you know, starts talking crap and says, where'd you get that Target? You know, blah, 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 blah. Then they start fighting, and I'm right behind them, and they're much bigger than I am. I'm not about to get involved in that scrap. So I also had to really go to the bathroom. So I just slide right on through and said, I just got to go.
I'll go this way.
I just got to go.
I mean, I don't take Target as a kind of mean thing because I like Target.
From the 707 on the Chill Not a Body text line, Terrell Owens dancing on the star.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's different things like that.
So many moments.
Right. But it feels like lately, though, it hasn't really been there. I mean, there's at least between the two teams, because between the two teams, too, you can always tell there's animosity, even with the Niners and the Raiders. I'd say that's just as big.
That's a big rivalry.
Almost as big of a rivalry, because you saw when C.O. Moore and Colin Kaepernick got into it. I think it was it after the game or was it halftime on their way to the locker rooms? Like, those two teams, they didn't like each other, and I think that's really also what's involved. It's not just involved with the fans. It's also involved with the teams.
Yeah, that's when it gets to the team, that's when you know it's a big rivalry, because we know that with the fan base. And then here especially, like you said, the Niners and Raiders, that rivalry here, obviously huge in the Bay Area, and a lot of it has to do with also when the Raiders left for L.A.
Right.
You know, you have some of the fans here who are not happy with the move, and then you have a lot of fans my age who stayed Niner fans, people from the East Bay who were Niner fans because the Raiders weren't around. It's interesting how that whole dynamic works, but I think because we're all right in each other's faces, and we've seen the best and worst of both teams.
Right.
And I'm sure it hurts that, you know, when you had that really great dynastic run for the 49ers, it was after the Raiders' big run. So that's where I think the whole idea comes in.
Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting to think about, because for instance, if you're looking at, I mean, if you're talking about the Niners fans and the Raiders fans, like, it intensifies whenever they play each other, even though it only comes every 4 years. But with the Giants and A's fans, though, like, that's also what's interesting, because the Giants look at the Dodgers as their main rival, because it all dates back to New York and Brooklyn and whatnot. But when the A's and Giants do clash and the Bay Bridge series comes together, especially after the 89 World Series, and I went to every Giants and A's game that I could. You may not say that, hey, yeah, the A's are our rival, or they may not be your, you know, specific rival, but I was watching these fans and I'm watching them go at it, and it's like, It's hard to imagine it not being a rivalry when you're out there watching the games with those fans. Maybe it doesn't seem like that if you're watching it on your TV, but if you're at those games, there's a lot of Bay Area kind of just, you know, East Bay versus San Francisco, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's different.
Proximity.
It's different.
I think that's what it comes down to, is that you're right in each other's faces and you can kind of smack talk each other. You know, I remember going to a bank one day and I forgot. What? I don't remember. I was going to a bank and I was talking baseball with somebody and they were just talking smack.
Right.
I was like, okay, let me tell you a couple things. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. But that's the thing, that you kind of go back and forth with random fans and it doesn't matter. It's just you're right in proximity with each other. And no matter what, it's like you have one team who's doing really well at the time and the other was on. You can say, hey, my team's doing well. Yours isn't. And then you can go back and forth. And that's the thing that's kind of funny. And you like with A's fans will hold 89 forever.
Right.
They'll sit there and say, beat you in 89. Well,
right.
And then Giants fans are like, well, he just won three. So.
Oh, it was amazing watching it last year when I was just at the A's and Giants games, because they had one fan talking about, you guys would be in Tampa Bay still if it wasn't for blah, blah, blah. Or not still, but you guys would have moved to Tampa Bay if it wasn't for this. Blah, blah, blah. It would have.
For the rights. That's what it was.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then. I mean, you had Giants fans just going, you know, three rings in the last five, or then you had A's fans just going, look at the records now, because the A's and Giants clearly were different last season. The A's were clearly the better team. And so you had that whole thing going on. But that's just what, for me, as far as just going to the games, you could tell there's a rivalry there. Now, I need to go to a Niner Cowboy regular season game, I think, because I've never been. I went to a Niner Raider game once, and that was pretty intense, but also that's when Terrell Pryor threw for like 17 yards and had the worst quarterback outing ever had by a quarterback in NFL history. but we stopped yelling after a little while, but it's interesting. It's interesting to watch because, you know, with the Niners too, it feels like their rivalry with the Seahawks, I think that's still there.
That's still there a little bit. It's lessened now because Richard Sherman's on the Niners. I mean, because he was one of the big catalysts when he was with the Seahawks, because, you know, Turkey on the 50.
Right.
You know, because he's a loudmouth and he's in your face. So, of course, Niner fans didn't like him. But as soon as he comes here, it's like, you know what? We love your town. We're bringing you over. We're happy. So I think in a way, you have that division rivalry, but it wasn't the same as when it was with Jim Harbaugh when he was here. That's when that rivalry really intensified, because you had the Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh rivalry between the two of them. And then you had two teams who were both really good at the time.
You know, I wonder how Seahawks fans view Richard Sherman leaving. I really wonder how they'd view it, because that's one of the things that sparks a rivalry, is a player going to that other team within the division. And so I wonder how they kind of view it, because on their end, I feel like, you know, whenever the Niners go to their stadium, whenever Seahawks fans go to the Niners stadium, I think that's still there.
You know what, though? They don't blame him because of what happened with the Seahawks. I mean, it wasn't like the Seahawks offered him a ton of money to stay, and he decided to say, hey, I'm going to go over to the Niners.
Right.
That wasn't the situation. If that was the case, that would have been completely different. It was, you know, he had the injury and everything, and then, you know, the Seahawks weren't going to – I think they were – they were to cut him at the time or something – not cut him, but something happened. And then he ended up coming to the Niners, and it worked out for him. And I think they're also happy with what he did for that team.
From the 650 on the Chill Not a Body text line, nothing compares to the 49ers and Cowboys rivalry of the early 90s. Muddy, rainy conditions at the stick, and the visiting team was being announced. Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle is blaring, and the crowd was deafening. Just awesome. That was from Mark in the 650. And then also from the 408, Anna, the rivalry isn't the same because we suck.
It's true. That's what happens when you don't win, because you don't have that intensified competitiveness.
Right, but that's where I'm saying, though, it's still there if both teams suck, because like when the Raiders and Chiefs both sucked, there was still that animosity between the two teams. You know, there's still something there. Maybe it's the teams that have to spark it overall. Like, I mean, the fans can roar and cheer about how, you know, crappy the other team is and how much you hate them. But in the end, it does come down to the teams, because if the teams don't show that animosity like the Niners and Seahawks used to back after that whole Richard Sherman, Michael Crabtree thing coming in the next season, you could tell that it was amplified just because of what happened in the playoffs previously. But in the end, I guess it's the teams that really got to spark it. And that's what made the Niners and Cowboys rivalry so great. And those teams were also incredibly good and two of the best that we've really ever seen. Those were the teams of the 90s.
Yeah. And the random barometer, I think you kind of say is, no matter what, no team, you don't ever want to lose to a team. But when you rank which teams you hate to lose to the most,
right?
I think that kind of is one of those things. Because, you know, with Niner fans, it's you hate to lose to the Cowboys. You hate to lose to the Raiders. You hate to lose to the Seahawks, especially.
Yeah.
Like, who are the teams that you really hate to lose to? It's like, oh, I can't stand losing to this team.
Right.
Would you say the Cardinals after what happened with them last year? I don't think it's that rivalry. There's no big rivalry there, but that one just burns.
True. You always see the ones with, I don't know, I mean, if I'm taking like a good team versus a crappy team, two teams that really are different, you look at the Steelers and the Bengals, there's always something there. The Steelers and the Ravens, Steelers with really anyone. And you know what?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still something there, too, just to compare like the Niners and Cowboys, since that was in a previous decade. I mean, you could look at the Raiders and Steelers, too, and their little rivalry in the 80s. Like, that's something that existed. And there's still that look because the two teams are kind of known as that, you know, they're known as.
Yeah, right there. You okay there?
I think I'm okay.
Steven's dying on the radio.
Yes,
right now.
I am. But you look at the Raiders and the Steelers, though, those two teams are kind of cut from the same cloth, mm-hmm. so to speak. And then you get you get certain games back in the early decades where you're just like, what, like when these two teams were actually good, and then it kind of sparks something, and there's still something there for between the Raiders and Steelers too. Like, there's still something.
I think it also comes down to the stories that families tell. You have, you know, when you're a kid watching your favorite team, and then you see your parents say they don't like a certain team, and then you carry that on, and it carries on almost to the next generation. And then it's like, now I have kids, and you know, my own rivalries, the stories I remember from the past, I'll tell them stories, and then. That's where I think it lives on. If you bring it on to the next generation, that's when it keeps going. But if it starts to die out, then that's when it goes away.
Right. And I think, you know what? I think rivalries are just harder to come by nowadays, especially ones that are kind of like the Niner Cowboys ones. Those were kind of organic and sort of happened. They didn't happen because of just like, you know, these two teams that grew up in the same spot in the past and they're just natural rivals. It happened because them two were really good and they were violent and they didn't like each other. And I think it's this kind of the same way like with any other rivalry that's outside of the division. And I don't think you see that all that much anymore just because, I mean, just of how sports are nowadays. They're really trying to crack down on any sort of that violence. Yeah. I guess the one that's
a good thing.
right. And it is, but also you just don't see it as much nowadays as far as just like ones that come up because outside of the division, at least. I mean, you see the Yankees and Red Sox. That's still one that's always going to linger.
Oh, God,
for sure.
Yeah.
You know, there's interdivision.
That's historical.
There's in-division ones that are always going to, you know, they're always be there. But
that's because you're going to face those teams numerous times throughout the year. So you always have, and you're always competing for that top spot in the division. So there's always those natural rivalries. That's where you have the Giants and Dodgers, and that rivalry, that like you said, that one's historic all the way back to New York. And that's one that will never die out, and I don't think it should.
Right. Chilton Autobody text line 95795 from the 510. We did forget about this one. Warriors versus Lakers and Clippers will be the best rivalry in sports for the next decade to compete for titles. I don't know about that. I think the Lakers and the Clippers just on their own for right now are going to have a rivalry to deal with. Maybe the Warriors will come back to prominence and then they'll get involved with that. But there was a Warrior Clipper one that was going on for a little bit too.
That was good.
Even though, like, you know, it didn't go to all the way to say, I don't know, the conference finals, but you could tell the two teams didn't like each other whenever they played. So, I mean, there was always that going on.
Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, those guys out there on the Clippers. I think it's like the Warriors versus Chris Paul, basically.
Yeah.
I feel like that's almost the rivalry.
Yeah. And it seems like right now it's the Giants. I mean, I feel like the Giants don't like the Indians all that much just because Yasiel Puig's on the team. You know, it's different. Different strokes are different.
Exactly.
So as we are discussing rivalries, we do have these games on Saturday. Who do you want to see more from? Do you think Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard? Who do you think is going to have the better game? Who do you think overall is going to impress you more? I mean, will C.J. Beathard make that jump to the second string? Because it looks like, as of right now, Nick Mullins has been with the second team in practice. I mean, will Nick Mullins be the ones who starts this week?
I think it sounds like C.J. Beathard might be the one starting if they put him as number two on the depth chart. But I think that Nick Mullins proved himself a lot last year with how he helped the team. You know, I know obviously they didn't, you know, they had four wins last year, but, you know, he performed pretty decent for where he was and the expectations around him. But C.J. Beathard, you know, he's faltered a lot, and I think that they're going to really focus on how he's playing, and this is going to be a big game for him because you got to see how he comes out there and if he'll be able to be consistent, if he'll be accurate. I think it's going to come down to a lot of what he's going to do.
It's not a sure thing though that Beathard's the second string quarterback.
You look at the
depth chart right now. It says Beathard or Mullins.
Oh, it does say or.
Yeah, it says or in the middle of it. So it's it all depends. So I think though you're going to see Nick Mullins probably for the first half and C.J. Beathard for the second half. But I mean, if you're just looking for a straight position battle, that's really where one's going to come from right there. With the rookies, you just want to see what they're going to give you. But if you're looking for a straight up position battle, you're watching the two QBs go head to head for the backup QB spot.
I mean, if you're basing it on last year, I think Nick Mullins should be the number two quarterback. But I think, like I said, I think you're going to see a lot more of them really focusing on how C.J. Beathard's also doing, because I just think he had a really poor showing.
And with the Raiders coming up in this week one, you're going to see about this starting unit that they're going to throw out there as far as the offensive line and the linebackers go. Vontaze Burfict seems to be that leader at middle linebacker, while Richie Incognito is trying to be that veteran who's kind of an anchor of the offensive line when you got a bunch of guys who are relatively young. So you're going to see those two guys actually play. They're not going to play at the beginning of the season. Incognito has two games. I don't remember how many Burfict has, but with that, you're going to see you're finally going to see the starting lineups in the preseason that you probably won't see in the regular season. I mean, and then on the other side also with the Niners, just how the running back position, now that's going to shake down. I think you are probably going to see Matt Breida show out. People forget that Matt Breida had 1,000 yards, more than 1,000 yards, all purpose as far as just receiving and rushing.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people forget that. And if he stays healthy, and while him and Mostert, they're both really quick, and Mostert's a special teams guy too, so they're not going to cut him or anything. But I'm interested to see if Matt Breida maybe takes over for Tevin Coleman, if those two kind of are at a battle. I don't know whether it will be, but I think it could be coming in the preseason.
I'm really intrigued to see how Tevin Coleman fits with this team, because Kyle Shanahan, obviously the relationship that they had with the Falcons, I'm really intrigued to see how he's going to fare right now with the Niners.
Coming up on the station, Joe Lowe and Dibs are going to be joined by Kevin Mitchell, who makes a barehanded catch at 7 o'clock. Danny White at 8 o'clock. That was a really good impression, by the way. Look it up. George Teague at 8:30. John Clayton, 9:05. Tim Roy at 9:30. And don't forget, coming up 10 to 2, Brian Baldinger will be in studio for the entire show with Steiny, Guru, and Bonte. Again, Steiny, Guru, Bonte. Just let them talk the entire time. Cholo and Dibs coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.